This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. If you're looking for some nice vegetables, you might reach for your garden or farmer's market or the produce section at the local grocery store. But our guest on this week's edition of Food Friday says we can broaden our vegetable horizons with plants that are foraged in nature, maybe even in our own backyards. And that might give us some respect for a lot of the plants we think of as weeds. Alan Burgo is a chef. His new book is called The Forager Chef's Book of Flora, Recipes and Techniques for Edible Plants from Garden, Field, and Forest. Alan, welcome back to Central Time.
Hey, thanks for having me. It's good to be back.
As a chef, you're clearly excited about using these foraged plants. What is it about foraging and using these ingredients that gets you excited?
Well, I'll tell you, when I was working in restaurants in the Twin Cities, I got introduced to wild plants from an area where they were brought to me as luxury goods. I would do the purchasing for some of the restaurants, and I'd see, oh, we're paying $10 to $12 for nettles or lamb's quarters or purslane. And farmers would bring these things to us because they knew that we wanted them. So I was really introduced to a lot of common garden weeds that are edible as luxury ingredients that I may be purchasing for more than I would conventional vegetables. So I was taught about them in kind of a different way than most people, I would say.
Now, your book is more about using forage plants. You do give some thoughts about safety. I think the main rule is do your homework before you start randomly picking up plants and eating them, right?
Oh, yeah, of course. You need to know exactly what something is before you eat it. But most of the things that I cover in the book are very easy to identify and very common.
Let's get into one of the categories you talk about, those wild greens. And you answered actually a question I've had. You know, I hear all the time, you can eat dandelion greens. And I'm like, great. I'd like love to get something good out of dandelions. I've picked the leaves, and it seems like they wilt within minutes of me picking them. How should we handle those fresh, wild dandelion or other wild greens we pick?
Yeah, so with any wild green, and really any green, wild or not, that I pick, the first thing that I do is I bring it home and I put it in some cold water that could be in a sink or in a tub or wherever. And, you know, cutting plants stresses them. So that's what makes them wilt. They're going to wilt right away. But if you refresh them in cold water and then rinse them and spin them dry in a salad spinner or just put them in some towels and then put them into a fridge, you will never have greens so fresh. And you will also see that by doing that, I have had greens last multiple weeks.
Wow.
In the fridge.
Yeah, I can't get those dandelion greens to last multiple minutes. So that's a great tip. Now let's talk about using some of them. You've got a few recipes you've shared with us. Wild green cakes. I think this is the first one in your book. What's a wild green cake?
So a wild green cake is kind of a conglomeration of, I started to see different recipes from around, and people would kind of make the same thing. The one in France, and then another one from my friend Sam Thayer, who has probably been on your show. You take cakes, you take some plants, you blanch them, cut them up, mix them with an egg and a pinch of flour, maybe a little grated nutmeg, and you make them into little patties, and you cook them up, and they're kind of like green burgers. I serve them to my chef friends. I serve them to people who've never had wild food, and everybody loves them. It's kind of hard to hate anything in burger form.
Let's bring out a caller now at 800-642-1234. Louie is with us in Oconto. Louie, hi.
Yes, I was wondering two things. One is, what can we make out of stinging nettle leaves? And is there a time of year that they're better than others? Whether they're young or old, does that make a difference? Number two is, how do we use the cattails?
Louie, thanks for the call. Let's start with those stinging nettles. These are things we can collect and eat. They have stinging and nettle in the name.
Yeah, so nettles are actually, they're a traditional food around the world. There's all kinds of different species. Some of my ancestors are from Scandinavia. And when the Swedish ambassador came to a restaurant I was cooking at, one of the things he requested was nettles cooked into something. So we made tortellini. You take the nettles, and to take their sting away, you can pick them with gloves, and then you can blanch them in water. You can steam them. Some people dehydrate them to make tea. But all you have to do is either crush or heat the plant, and the stingers will be gone. and they're going to be more nutritious and I think delicious than any kale or spinach people have had. Steaming them is just really, it is delicious. You put a little bit of butter on those and some salt at the table, and it's just a wonderful green. You want to get them in the springtime. If you keep cutting them back, like you can even do it with a lawnmower, you can keep getting new growth. But once the plants have started to make their seeds on the top, they're going to be a little bit tough and stringy, you know, just like an old vegetable in the garden.
And how about those cattails you mentioned?
So, yeah, cattails, there's a couple parts that I really like. The first is just the shoot. So it takes a little bit of trimming. I actually have a video on my YouTube channel that illustrates the process. And in kind of the mid to late spring, I'll take them, say like late May or early June, and I'll break them off. And then you need to go through a couple layers of the outer kind of shell that you're going to toss off of the shoot. And then inside is you're going to have like a half inch shoot of tender, kind of crisp vegetable that you can just eat raw. They're really good with cucumbers, but you can just eat them raw, and they're good like that. A little bit of olive oil, some salt, some lemon juice, and they make a really nice vegetable added to salads and things like that. The pollen is actually harvested in the Middle East and in China and used to make sweets. And I actually make something called pollen truffles, where I take the pollen and I mix it with a little bit of honey and butter, because what could be better with pollen than honey? And I knead it into like a little dough, and you make these little cones that people would eat with a chopstick. It's one of the coolest tastes that I have ever had. I served it to the Today Show when they were out filming with me a few weeks ago.
Talking to Alan Burgo, chef, author of The Forager Chef's Book of Flora, all about cooking with different kinds of wild plants. Alan, it's fall now. We focused on some more spring-type things. What has you excited out there right now?
Oh, fall. This is the peak time of the year, because now a lot of people probably heard wind last night, and wind in the fall means that nuts are getting blown off the trees. So I just collected a bunch of butternuts. I got black walnuts. In October, I'm going to be going down to my hickory nut spots. You're going to get those in southern Wisconsin and southern Minnesota, especially southeast Minnesota. Mushrooms are also just huge right now. If you have oaks on your property, you can go around and look for hen of the woods. They're one of the best mushrooms ever. And people on the West Coast that have lots of mushrooms, they are jealous of the Midwest, because we get hen of the woods. They're one of the best fall mushrooms that you can get. They're easy to identify. I have seen hen of the woods that are 30, 40 pounds in a single mushroom, and they will come up all over the place. And there's lots of other mushrooms, but the hen of the woods are a great place to start, and they're going to be going for at least another month here.
Another recipe you've shared with us, this surprised me. I got a lot of these in my yard. Milkweed. We can eat the milkweed pods?
You can absolutely eat the pods of Asclepias syriaca and Asclepias speciosa. So common milkweed and showy milkweed. They're also they're both very, very common. You don't want to eat other types of milkweed, but those two are some of the most widespread. You always want to blanch the pods for a minute or two before you cook them. But I didn't even used to call them milkweed pods when I put them on my restaurant menus. I called them wild okra because I don't like the word weed. And everyone likes fried okra. So they're a great substitute for okra in really any recipe that you could think of without the kind of slippery quality that okra will have. They're just a wonderful little vegetable.
And so you've got a cornmeal fried milkweed pod for us. I like okra, so I'm imagining I'd like this. How do we make this one?
Well, you blanch the milkweed pods, and then you're going to soak them in a little bit of buttermilk, and then toss them in some seasoned cornmeal, and you're going to fry them up. And then I serve them with a little dipping sauce. I make a kind of like a ranch dressing out of dried wild onions or wild leeks that a lot of other people will know, especially if you're a morel hunter, because they're going to be up the same time in the spring. And yeah, it's just a great little vegetable.
If somebody's out there thinking, I've never done this before, but I'd be interested in getting started foraging and cooking something, what are some of the easiest ways to get started?
Well, Facebook and social media is actually super helpful here. So I have one friend who moderates over 300 mushroom groups around the world. And I'd say there's about 10 in Minnesota alone. There's a couple in Wisconsin that are very good. Wild Food Wisconsin, a few of my friends run. That's on Facebook. You can just go there. You don't have to post anything. And you can see what people are picking. And you can learn kind of by osmosis, so to speak, there. Another thing is I like field guides. Sam Thayer and his company Foragers Harvest are in Wisconsin. They're right in Wisconsin. It's a great local company to support. And his field guides are, they are the best. They're held as kind of the gold standard in the foraging world. So I would just get all of Sam's books. Those are at foragersharvest.com. And then you know, get into some of the communities or go out with someone. Sam leads classes. There's a lot of classes that go on in the cities because I'm here in Menominee. I'm just an hour away from that. But there's a lot of different ways that you can get into it. But social media and getting books is a it's an easy way to do it remotely.
You mentioned you'll be out foraging for windfall nuts over the next couple of days. What is a recipe at the top of your list as we wrap up?
Well, I just finished making 400 portions for a festival I'm cooking down in Prairie du Chien of it's called black walnut croquant. I learned it from a pastry chef from Portugal. And you take black walnuts or any nut you can use and a little bit of sugar, and you cook it in a pot, stirring constantly until the sugar turns to caramel. It'll get a little smoky, so you want to open a window. And then you hit it with a good pinch of kosher salt, and you spread it out on a tray and let it cool. And I tell you, some people don't like black walnuts. I once served this to a to the Bell Museum for about 300 children, and not a single kid turned their nose up at a black walnut. It will make any nut delicious. But that's at the top of my list. I always make that.
Alan, thanks a lot for joining us again today.
Hey, thanks for having me on.
That's Alan Burgo, a chef and author of the new book, The Forager Chef's Book of Flora. You can check out some of his recipes at WPR.org/Food Friday and head over to the Ideas Network Facebook page. Love to hear if you are a forager yourself.